I'm Ashley Legasic.
And I'm Catherine DeClercq.
And we make up CTV's newest podcast, Life Unmasked.
We'll bring you everything you need to know about exactly how we're going to return to normal life post-pandemic.
New episodes come out every Thursday morning on iHeartRadio, and they're available on all streaming platforms later in the day.
We hope you'll tune in.
The queue for a code, digital demand and download delays, millions of Ontarians logging on for their proof of protection. Were you able to get yours? Good evening. The province's enhanced vaccine certificate won't be operational until Friday, and even then, it won't be mandatory.
Still, that isn't stopping people from requesting theirs. But is the government site set up for the surge in demand? CTV's Sean Leithong is live at Queen's Park tonight with more. Sean.
Well, Michelle and Nathan, the weekend rollout of the vaccination QR code saw a high number of downloads, and that number went up by a lot this morning. But the two-phased rollout of this plan, first being the paper slip, then the QR code, has put us in a situation where the government is pushing people to download the QR code, but they're also saying you don't have to.
The rollout of the province's vaccine QR code is available for all, but this morning, some were having trouble downloading their proof. High volume leading to long wait times like this, where one account was told there were somewhere between 4.9 million people or 12,000 people ahead in line. Then the line was paused. In a statement, the Ministry of Health says, "We're currently experiencing high volumes of downloads. A few users experienced a brief technical issue earlier today, which has been resolved." Since the QR codes became available on Friday, the ministry says there have been 2.5 million receipts downloaded, and that includes 215,000 this morning alone. But in the race to get the QR code, the government has also said you don't have to download and you can continue using the paper slip.
We still have to keep that for people that aren't as savvy on the tech side. Like I'm not the savvy guy on the tech side, that's for sure.
Even though the paper slips can easily be forged, Premier Ford said today while in Windsor, Essex, that the paper slips are necessary.
But not everyone, carries around their cell phone. I'm talking elderly parents. So we're going to make sure that we still have the little vaccine certificates.
Also, this comes as the College of Physicians and Surgeons of Ontario is placing restriction on the practice of two doctors against issuing exemptions for vaccination, masks, or testing. Doctors Mark Trozzi of Harrow and Roshan Killian of Owen Sound have each been critical of pandemic restrictions in the past. Today at Queen's Park, opposition leaders said this issue has been influenced by the Premier's past resistance to proof of vaccine mandates.
We know that Ford didn't want to do this. We know that he got dragged to a certificate program kicking and screaming. As a result, it was late, and it's inadequate.
The Premier has made it clear that he isn't a full and firm believer in vaccine mandates and the vaccine certificate. What Doug Ford has managed to do in this regard is actually undermine how strong the position is for the government of Ontario and therefore for the people of Ontario.
The Ministry of Health says they are encouraging as many people as possible to download their electronic QR code.
And the ministry is saying they are encouraging people to download the QR code because it is the most efficient and it is the most secure. Reporting live, I'm Sean Leithong. Nathan, I'll send it back to you.
All right, thank you, Sean. Meanwhile, Doug Ford is facing backlash over comments about immigration and Ontario's labor shortage. Ford was in Tecumseh this afternoon addressing the skilled labor shortage.
We need people. And so, folks, if you have some hardworking people, I just have one criteria. You come here like every other new Canadian has come here, you work your tail off. If you think you're coming to collect the dole and sit around, not going to happen. Go somewhere else. You want to work? Come here. We have so much work, we can't keep up with it right now.
Opposition members are calling on the Premier to apologize, with Liberal leader Stephen Del Duca tweeting, "This kind of divisive language is deeply disappointing. A Premier is supposed to unite Ontarians, not wedge us further apart." Meanwhile, NDP leader Andrew Horvath tweeted, "Today, Doug Ford chose to traffic in demeaning stereotypes about new Ontarians looking to build a better life for their families. He should apologize. But we've been here before. Sadly, this is who he is." In a statement, the Premier's office says there are over 290,000 unfilled jobs in Ontario and that the province is open to anyone and everyone who wants to work hard, support their family, and contribute to their community.
They are the people tasked with actually enforcing the province's proof of protection protocols, and that job is not always easy.
It's been nearly a month since the first phase of the certificate mandate, so how are frontline workers feeling? CTV's Mike Walker is live with more. Mike.
Well, Nathan, we spoke with a number of workers today who tell us for the most part a majority of their customers are respectful and understanding of the vaccine rules. However, there are occasions when they're on the receiving end of harassment and verbal abuse.
Can I see your vaccine passport? Sure.
For server Jeannie Eldred, this has become an additional responsibility.
Perfect. Do you have your ID?
But verifying a customer's vaccination certificate isn't always this smooth.
When they come in, they don't want to provide it. And when we tell them that we can't serve them due to that and ask them to leave, they start getting very vulgar.
Eldred says in some cases she has dealt with verbal abuse.
They all just very aggressive, swearing and yelling and that, but there's not much that we can do about it.
Raymond Kwan has tried to accommodate customers who can't provide proof on his patio, but has been victim of dine-in dash.
Then they sit outside. After they eat, they walk away. They're angry. I know, they're angry, but what can you do?
Since September 22nd, proof of vaccination has been required to dine in at restaurants, go to gyms and theaters. According to a Restaurants Canada survey, half of restaurants who responded said staff have experienced hostile confrontations.
It's unfortunate. People decide that they want to make a public political statement, but they have to understand our staff is caught in the middle. They're enforcing the law.
The industry has expressed concern about being enforcers. Some workers admit to avoiding confrontation at all costs.
Generally, I don't really push too hard just because I don't really want any trouble. I don't get paid enough to.
At Franz on College Street, Tara McCullen says the biggest challenge has been verifying different certificates.
It's time consuming. It sometimes gets a little tricky if people have the QR code, but it doesn't show the date or it's from a different province or country, and then you have to navigate that and figure out exactly where to find the relevant information.
Juan hopes Ontario's new vaccine QR codes will improve that, but says his restaurant needs to hire more staff just to verify certificates.
We have a little lineup all the time. So we have to get more people to.
As for Aldred, it's incidents among the small minority that she says leaves her feeling helpless.
We just prefer if you were a little nicer and understanding.
But is relieved a majority of customers are respectful and understanding of the vaccine requirement. Now, a number of restaurants and bars we spoke with today say they are trying to hire more staff to help verify vaccination certificates. Others considering hiring security to take the burden off their staff. Reporting live, I'm Mike Walker. Back to you.
Thank you, Mike. And head to our website for a reminder of the vaccination rules, along with a step-by-step guide on how you can access your personalized QR code. You'll find it all at ctvnewstoronto.ca.
Next to the international phenomenon having a very real impact here at home, global supply chain challenges that could change the way we shop for months.
Delays in getting goods into stores and ultimately onto shelves. Many businesses are already feeling it, and so are customers. CTV's Scott Lightfoot is live with more on that. Scott.
Michelle, it's probably something you've dealt with if you tried to buy furniture or appliances in the past few months. Now, a warning that it will spread to things like toys and clothes, and it could have a major impact on your Christmas shopping.
At Lee Valley Tools in Scarborough, there is plenty for shoppers to buy, but the company's CEO is warning that could change.
The lead times on products are so long now, in many cases exceeding a year, that when we run out of something, odds are we're not going to get it back in stock.
Robin Lee sent a letter to his customers suggesting they start their holiday shopping early, as supply chain issues continue to cause major delays for the delivery of goods around the globe.
Now it's just the sheer volume of traffic that's held up in shipment from overseas. And that's compounded by port facilities that are insufficient, not having enough truck drivers, not having enough containers, not having enough ships, and the inability to unload what's already on the water.
For shoppers, that may mean higher prices and an inability to find what they're looking for.
We've been everywhere pretty much, and everyone has the same story. It's COVID-related, and it's going to be 3 to 4 months before we even get our order.
The catch-up from COVID shutdowns last year, combined with higher-than-expected demand from customers, causing chaos that some experts expect won't go away anytime soon.
We'll take at least a good year until we kind of get back to some sort of normal. One of the reasons for my kind of dire predictions, I would say, is that there's still a lot of uncertainty in the air with respect to the impact of COVID.
Meaning last-minute Christmas shoppers could end up empty-handed.
And, of course, a lot of people doing their shopping online, but experts warn that online retailers are also facing similar challenges. Reporting live at Gerrard Square Mall, I'm Scott Lightfoot. Michelle, back to you.
Thanks, Scott. From tools to tires, the shortage of stock drivers will want to note as winter slowly draws closer. Pat Foran with what you need to know just ahead.
Things really cool down tonight, but tomorrow is a different weather story. Michelle Jobin's here with a look at the current conditions. Michelle.
Well, Nathan, yes, we've had these seasonal temperatures to get used to over the last few days after weeks of above seasonal warmth and a lot of humidity. But things change again as we get into tomorrow. We get a little bit of a midweek gift for Tuesday and Wednesday. Now, taking a look at our satellite and radar imagery right now, we have winds out of the northwest at the moment, and that's really, or throughout the day today, it's sometimes gusting over 30 kilometers an hour in the GTA. And that's really helped to amplify some lake effect showers, but they have for the most part moved off at this point. Temperatures in the upper single digits off to the north and east of us, sitting in the low teens to the southwest of us, and here in the city of Toronto at this time, very seasonal, 13 degrees at the islands, 12 at Pearson Airport with sunshine, clear and 6 degrees overnight, and those clear skies will carry over into tomorrow. I'll tell you coming up about what you can expect. It's going to be a beautiful Tuesday on the way. Back to you, Nathan.
Thanks, Michelle. New details are emerging from a California court about a Toronto murder and a rapper who's been on the run from Canadian justice.
We're learning more about a possible motive and how U.S. law enforcement caught up with the fugitive. John Woodward has this CTV News exclusive.
Toronto rapper Top 5 peppered his music with references to Toronto street gangs. Go get him, guy. Get my gang. But documents unsealed in an American extradition hearing say it was no act. American authorities say Top 5, whose real name is Hassan Ali, is a member of something called the Go Get 'Em Gang, and says that explains his alleged involvement in the shooting death of an innocent man, 20-year-old Hashim Omar Hashi, an accounting student who was gunned down outside his parking lot back in January. A murder that unfolded as surveillance cameras watched, with an armed man leaving the front passenger seat of a black Honda Civic to shoot Hashi several times.
U.S. authorities don't identify the shooter or the driver, but they say Canadian investigators were able to use more surveillance video to track that car and identify a third man in the back seat. They say that was Hassan Ali.
Authorities allege the motive was revenge for the 2017 killing of Ali's brother, Syed Ali, known as Foolish, adding Ali subsequently discussed killing people in retaliation for his brother's death on public social media posts, including one less than 3 days before the murder.
When you throw in that it was actually a gang murder, that has a higher level threshold of attention from the courts and from media.
Ali was first charged with accessory to murder. The charge was upgraded to first-degree murder in May. That's when he's alleged to have cut his GPS tracking bracelet and fled to the U.S. using false documents.
Like, I ain't do shit. Everybody know I ain't do shit, but save that for God.
While on the run, he told fans on Instagram he wasn't guilty, even as he tried to launch records on his label, posts that were part of how U.S. authorities say they tracked him down. John Woodward, CTV News.
Just ahead, the detective revisiting a murder case that shocked Toronto. A former homicide investigator reveals the stunning admission that put the killer of Stephanie Rengel behind bars.
To Whitby next, and the police investigation focusing in on this home.
Its residents, a mother and daughter, have not been seen since last week. CTV's Beth McDonnell is live tonight on Scepter Place with more. Beth.
Michelle, investigators tonight are continuing to search for the 85-year-old mother and her 58-year-old daughter. Police say over the past 5 days, information has been coming in, but it hasn't led them to the women, and concern is growing. Several family members comfort one another outside the home of 58-year-old Ava Burton and her 85-year-old mother, Tatilda Noble. It's been 5 days since the Whitby women disappeared. Loved ones visiting the scene visibly upset.
It's a surprise, really, because they said they're very quiet, they're very nice people, say hi to them, they're very cordial.
As more time passes, neighbors too are grappling with what has happened.
Well, you always hope for the best, but I don't know. You kind of, after 4 or 5 days, you start to think the worst, eh? But right now, you're still hopeful that they will find them and everything works out for them.
Durham Regional Police arrived at the house just meters from the border with Oshawa Thursday afternoon after a call from a concerned family member. They say Noble lives at the home with Burton and her son.
We still want to locate these two parties.
Officers say they found evidence of something suspicious in the home on Friday. It was collected over the weekend by the forensic identification team. Investigators today continuing their efforts by going door to door.
As time goes on, it is obviously more frustrating for investigators and concerning, and we want to, you know, make sure that they're found. And we are, like I said, appealing to any witnesses, any family members, friends, anyone that would have information.
Police say they are now reviewing surveillance video, some of it taken from Iris Carson's house. She says her footage shows cars and people going by, nothing out of the ordinary, unlike the police presence on her street.
Shocked. This is a pretty quiet neighborhood. Nothing really happens here. It's very unusual, and it seems like a very peaceful neighborhood.
Holding out, police will be able to find this missing mother and her daughter soon. Police say they're still here, keeping the home secure. Police are asking anyone that may have seen anything suspicious between Monday, October 11th, and Thursday, October 14th, to come forward. Reporting live in Whitby, I'm Beth McDonnell. Michelle, back to you.
Thank you, Beth. It was seen as by many as a sign of disrespect, the Prime Minister declining an invitation to visit a BC First Nation on the first National Day for Truth and Reconciliation.
Instead, Justin Trudeau vacationed with his family. Today, he visited that First Nation seeking redemption. CTV's Kevin Gallagher reports.
These pairs of children's shoes, a painful reminder of lives lost at residential schools, are now being used to call for action from the Canadian government. After Prime Minister Justin Trudeau let down Tkamloops Tshwetmuk First Nation Chief Roseanne Casimir when he didn't respond to two of her invitations to attend a ceremony on the first day for Truth and Reconciliation more than 2 weeks ago, instead vacationing at a Tofino beach house.
The shock, anger, and sorrow and disbelief was palpable in our community, and it rippled throughout the world, to say the least. Today is about making some positive steps forward and rectifying a mistake.
Trudeau apologized to Chief Casimir and other Indigenous people who were disappointed by his actions.
I wish I had been here a few weeks ago, and I deeply regret it. But I am here today to take the hand extended by Tkamloops Tshwetmuk.
215 unmarked graves of children as young as 3 years old were discovered on the grounds of the Kamloops Residential School last spring. Painful evidence of the horrors Indigenous children faced at these institutions.
And he treated us as less than human. Those of you that know the stories of these places know how our people were treated. Humiliated and shaved their heads, deloused, and given a number and not a name. I'm 60,238.01. That's my number. But that's not who I am.
But Indigenous leaders want more action, like the funding of a healing center and the release of all government residential school records.
I am very hopeful that with support of many, many voters across this country, that this country will do the right thing now and fund the actual healing of survivors, of the families, so we can, as a country, move on.
The Assembly of First Nations National Chief Roseanne Archibald is also calling for the appointment of a special rapporteur by the United Nations to investigate the deaths of children at residential schools. Kevin Gallagher, CTV News, Ottawa.
It's now been 2 days since a Canadian, along with 16 other missionaries, were allegedly abducted by a gang in Haiti.
Officials in Canada and the U.S. are both working to get the captured home safely, with ransom money believed to be the motive here. CTV's Rahim Ladani joins us in the studio with more. Rahim.
Well, Michelle and Nathan, local experts say the gang responsible for this abduction typically demands ransoms of around $20,000, but that paying the money isn't a sustainable solution.
The FBI has joined the effort to free 17 abducted missionaries in Haiti, including one Canadian.
They are doing these kidnappings for ransom, for money. No politics are involved. It's not terrorism. Their goal is to make as much money as they can from the hostage taking.
The group of workers, part of Christian Aid Ministries, were helping build an orphanage Saturday when their bus was hijacked. Global Affairs Canada says the government of Canada's first priority is always the safety and security of its citizens. Due to provisions of the Privacy Act, no further information can be disclosed.
As soon as you pay, it's going to happen again 10 minutes later and you're paying again. So it's a lot better to rescue the people and look after those that have done it and put them away or whatever the case may be. But at the same time, you just can't stand back and let nothing happen.
Police believe the 400 Mwozo gang is responsible. The same gang abducted five French priests and two nuns in April, who were ultimately released. Haiti's Center for Analysis and Research in Human Rights has recorded 628 abductions this year, and a spike of 300% since July, when the country's president, Jovenel Moïse, was assassinated. A month later, a 7.2 magnitude earthquake killed more than 2,200 people. Experts believe both events have contributed to a rise in gang violence.
As much as the gang are getting stronger, the police is getting weaker because the police doesn't have the means. They are not reinforced, really, and we see that the Haitian government is powerless.
Armed gangs gaining more power, already believed to control half of Haiti's capital city.
The other abducted workers are all American citizens, and the Christian Aid Ministries say the entire group is made up of six women, six men, and five children. Reporting live, I'm Raheem Ladani. Michelle, back to you.
Thank you, Raheem. The first international trip by Canada's new Governor General is underway. Mary Simon met with outgoing Chancellor Angela Merkel in Berlin today. The Queen's representative to Canada is beginning a four-day state visit to Germany. She later attended a dinner in her honor prior to traveling to Frankfurt tomorrow. Simon will attend the Frankfurt Book Fair, where Canada is this year's guest of honor. She'll also take part in a roundtable discussion about Arctic exploration at the Frankfurt Archaeological Museum.
Pfizer has formally requested that Health Canada approve its vaccine for children. The shots will be given to kids age 5 to 11. The doses are about one-third the size of what's administered to adults and teens 12 and up. Pfizer submitted clinical trial data at the beginning of the month. Health Canada said it will prioritize its review, but once approved, the new doses for kids still might need to be procured.
Across the province, nearly 87.5% of eligible people have now received at least one dose of a COVID-19 vaccine. And more than 83.1% of eligible people are considered fully vaccinated. That represents more than 10.8 million people in Ontario.
Saskatchewan is transferring six COVID-19 ICU patients to Ontario. The Western province is running out of intensive care space and staff. As of yesterday, a record 84 patients were in the ICU. The premier is also seeking help from the federal government, asking for specialized intensive care support. Saskatchewan has had to redeploy 600 workers from surgeries and other services so far. Its healthcare system has been overwhelmed by mostly unvaccinated patients.
Public Health Ontario is reporting 373 new cases in its most recent update. 265 of those cases are among people who either aren't fully vaccinated or their vaccination status is unknown. More than 20,000 tests have been processed in the last 24 hours, and the province's positivity rate is sitting at 1.8%.
423 more cases are now considered resolved, raising that total to more than 581,000 over the course of the pandemic. Two additional deaths are linked to the virus, meaning 9,815 lives have been lost to COVID-19 in Ontario.
Tonight's regional breakdown includes 71 new cases in Peel Region, 62 in the City of Toronto. There are 26 new cases in Hamilton, 18 in York Region. Durham and Halton are both reporting 12 new cases, with three in Niagara.
He served three U.S. presidents and was America's first black Secretary of State. Retired General Colin Powell has died due to complications from COVID-19.
The 84-year-old was fully vaccinated but had a blood cancer that weakens the immune system. CTV's Joy Malvin has a look at Powell's life and legacy.
Colin Powell wore many titles, on the battlefield serving two tours in Vietnam, rising to the rank of a four-star general. Presidents sought his advice, from Ronald Reagan to George W. Bush, breaking racial barriers as the first black national security advisor, chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and later U.S. Secretary of State.
Secretary Powell was, simply and completely, a leader. The result was that his people would walk through walls for him.
Powell led the U.S. to victory in the first Gulf War, liberating Kuwait from Saddam Hussein.
Our strategy to go after this army is very, very simple. First, we're going to cut it off, and then we're going to kill it.
After September 11th, he opposed America's involvement in Iraq, but made the case to go to war before the United Nations. The intelligence turned out to be false. There were no weapons of mass destruction.
I regret it now because the information was wrong.
A regret that Powell called a blot on his record, remembered as a great public servant, a patriot, and lifelong Republican who grew disillusioned with his own party.
He'll be sorely missed at a time when things are polarized and very divided in the United States, as they are in other countries, including our own. Colin Powell was always a voice of reason and a voice of understanding.
Around the world, political leaders are paying tribute, and President Joe Biden has ordered flags lowered to honor his friend, the general, who spent a lifetime committed to peace. Joy Malvin, CTV News, Washington. Next to our special series, The Detective. And we want to warn you some of the disturbing details in this story to note. The 2008 killing of Stephanie Rangel is what it centers around. She was just 14 years old.
The former homicide investigator who helped solve the case says he was stunned by what the young woman charged with murder admitted during her police interview. CTV's Austin Delaney's live with more. Austin.
Well, from the get-go, this wasn't really a whodunit for investigators. They soon learned a 17-year-old boy from the neighborhood was the man with the knife that stabbed Stephanie Rangel. What shocked them, and really shocked them, was that his 14-year-old girlfriend was the mastermind.
Melissa Totorovich was described by the judge at her murder trial as the puppeteer. Her then-boyfriend, David Bagshaw, the puppet. Bagshaw killed Melissa's perceived love rival, Stephanie Rangel, stabbing her six times in the chest. But it was Totorovich who ordered the hit, as described by the lead homicide investigator. The detective in charge of the Rangel case is now CP24's crime analyst, Steve Ryan.
Her boyfriend did it. She had zero remorse. She was glad it happened. She did not like her. She did not hesitate to tell us just how happy she was.
Todorovich was just 14 at the time, Bagshaw 17, Stephanie Rangel 14, when she was left for dead in a snowbank by her East York home January 1st, 2008. Bagshaw killed Stephanie on the promise of sex from his then-girlfriend, Melissa. And after the killing, he went to collect on her promise.
David Bagshaw went to Melissa's house, and they had sex. They reenacted the scene. Melissa pretended to be Stephanie in that reenactment. It was the most horrific, bizarre, gut-wrenching thing that you could ever imagine. Just pure evil. Like, it was just how it was just a matter of fact with all of the details, with this little girl dead.
How does it... When you're talking to Melissa, she's 14.
She's 14, yeah.
She's just a teenager.
Yeah.
And how is it that a mind is thinking like that?
Exactly. That's what makes her, in my opinion, as dangerous a person as there is.
Sentenced to life with no chance of parole for 7 years, Todorovich will eventually get out of prison. And that worries the former homicide cop. Her ability to use sex to pursue what she wants, no matter what it is.
The psychiatrist who testified on behalf of the Crown said that any other guys that Melissa gets involved with in the future, their lives are in danger because of her just overbearing way with no emotion.
Todorovich is currently back behind bars after her parole was revoked when the board learned she was in a relationship with two ex-cons and manipulating both against each other.
And much more detail in my podcast, The Detective, released today. Bagshaw, by the way, is 31 years old. He spent the last 14 years in prison. This month, he applied for parole, denied. Reporting live, I'm Austin Delaney.
All right, thank you, Austin. And you can subscribe to The Detective on iHeart or wherever you listen to podcasts. New episodes are released every Monday, and you can visit our website for more details from the investigations.
Still ahead, disappointment for fans of one of the world's hottest acts. Why Toronto's own The Weeknd is canceling his world tour.
And I'm Pat Foran. Coming up on Consumer Alert, as the cooler temperatures arrive, you might be thinking about putting on your winter tires. If you need to buy winter tires, you should know, due to the pandemic, there could be shortages of some brands and sizes. I'll have my reports. That's just ahead.
And cooler, though seasonal, temperatures tonight with a low of 6 degrees. But tomorrow, a bit of a reprieve. 20 degrees and sunny tomorrow. Winds will be out of the west, shifting to southwest. Sometimes 20 to 40 kilometers an hour, but it's going to feel quite nice as we get into the day. And that's a full 7 degrees above our seasonal high for this time of the year of 13 degrees. Our normal overnight low is 5. So we're in seasonal territory for the last few days. And then we get a little bit of an uptick in our temperatures. But we'll be back to seasonal territory later in the week. And I'll tell you more about that coming up very soon in your 7-day forecast. Stay with us.
As we reported earlier, the pandemic has caused supply shortages for a number of products, and winter tires are among them.
Some tire companies had to close down their factories. There's been a shortage of rubber, and there are also shipping delays. Pat Foran has our story on Consumer Alert. Pat.
I do, Nathan and Michelle. Thank you. Tire shops say they've known for months there could be problems getting certain tires this fall and winter. While many say they're stocked up with inventory now, there may be some brands and sizes that soon could be difficult to find.
Some tire shops are already busy installing winter tires. Francis Ranger wanted to get it done early.
My husband was on the ball and made the appointment nice and early so that we're not caught out and having to wait longer than we want to.
Another reason to get winter tires sooner this year is that due to supply chain issues, some tires may be harder to find.
Last year when COVID started, there was a big pause in production at most of the tire manufacturers.
Cal Tire says it's well stocked with inventory, but it expects some sizes could sell out and be harder to restock.
I would really recommend shopping early, especially if you're looking, like you say, for a specific brand or sizing. There will be sizes and tires that will not be available out there.
At Green Car Tire, they've also been told some tires will be harder to source this fall.
We've actually heard from all of our suppliers, and we have about a dozen that there will be limited supply, short supply of some tires.
Tires that are being shipped from Asia could also cost another 10 to 15% more due to shipping issues. Corey Stokes says while tire shops may have a good supply now, that could change as the season progresses.
You're better to get it sooner than later. You want to be stuck at the last minute without any tires, for sure, especially if your insurance obligates you to have them.
No matter what kind of tires you use, now is a good time to check your tire pressure and tread depth. And if you switch tires and have tire pressure monitoring, you may need to reset your system.
And every year, more Canadians are switching to winter tires. In Ontario, about 69% of drivers use them. The industry expects the supply chain issues won't be resolved for another year. On your side, I'm Pat Foran.
If you have a consumer story idea, email us at alert@ctv.ca.
Well, as it so happens, I got to jump on things and put my winter tires on today. But with the temperatures tomorrow, I'm feeling like it's too early.
Yeah, but that supply shortage is a concern. But you made the right decision, according to Pat Foran, even though the weather doesn't seem to show that.
Oh, we'll get there. I mean, you know, it's not that far away, so I still think it was a pretty good move. But yes, tomorrow's forecast is looking very nice, Michelle and Nathan. We're looking at a return to above seasonal temperatures, though not quite as warm as we were for those few weeks, and also without the humidity that we were seeing before this past weekend. Weather is brought to you by Trane, the most reliable heating and cooling brand. It's hard to stop a train. So let's take a look at how we're doing temperature-wise right now, because it was a very seasonal day today, and it continues to be through the overnight period. It's tomorrow that we get a bit of a shift. 9 degrees in Muskoka, 12 in Toronto, 10 in Trenton, 17 degrees, I should say, in Windsor right now. So holding on to a little bit more warmth, as so often is the case in southwestern Ontario. Overnight tonight, 6 degrees for our overnight low. Normal for this time of the year would be 5. So we're in seasonal territory. It's felt a lot different in the last few days, but it's actually where we should be. And we'll get back there later on in the week. Skies will be clear. Winds will be out of the west at around 10 kilometers an hour. And they're going to continue to shift during the day tomorrow. So here's a look at tomorrow's highs. 20 degrees is our projected high for the city of Toronto. 13 is normal for this time of the year. 19 for Kingston, 12 is normal, and 21 versus 14 in Niagara Falls. So we're doing quite comfortably as we head into the day. Winds have been out of the northwest today, and that's helped to amplify the feeling of being a little bit more cool, and it's also helped to give us some lake effect showers. Tomorrow, they'll be out of the southwest eventually, west to southwest, and that's going to help to make us feel a little bit warmer. High pressure sliding into place. Both on the surface, and also we have an upper level ridge bringing us this warmth. But we do have a weather maker on the way for us in the next little while. So I want to put our forecast radar in motion, show you that overnight tonight, for the most part, we're going to be clear. As we get into tomorrow, also the case. A little bit of cloud cover moving in as we get into Wednesday. And then as we get into late Wednesday into Thursday, that's when the next system arrives. So 20 tomorrow with sunshine, Wednesday mix of sun and cloud with 17 showers. Cooler, 14 degrees for Thursday. Friday, it's going to be just 12 degrees and a mix of sun and cloud, and cooler for the weekend and a little bit unsettled. Stay with us. There's lots more to talk about on CTV News Toronto. We'll be back after the break.
It's a Vaughn family's fight to bring their beloved dog back home.
For nearly 2 weeks, he's been held at Animal Services in a dispute over his breed. CTV's Janice Golding reports.
Look, he's heavier than kimchi.
To the Chang family, which has been homeschooling since the start of the pandemic, 12-month-old Tedji is more than a pet.
He's my best friend. He's not just a dog.
He's just one of my child.
He's my only friend since the pandemic.
But 11 days ago, Tedji got out through an open door and was picked up by Vaughn Animal Services. And VAS says it will not return the pup until it has completed DNA testing to determine Tedji is not a pit bull.
It's been horrible. I mean, you know, my wife has been literally crying day and night. My sons are completely devastated.
In 2005, Ontario's Dog Owners Liability Act banned the ownership of pit bulls. However, the Chang family has documents from the American Bully Kennel Club and two veterinarians that state the dog is not a pit bull. In my professional opinion, Tedji is determined to be an American bully and therefore not a prohibited breed in the province of Ontario, said Dr. Ahmed Badri from the Toronto Central Animal Clinic.
The dog has two ears, he has a round head, he has a tail, and he has four legs. And that's pretty much where the similarity ends. It's outrageous.
For its part, the city of Vaughan says this matter is under investigation and cannot be commented on at this time, adding VAS and the entire city of Vaughan must follow the provincial law that bans the ownership of pit bulls. While they await the outcome of the investigation, the Changs aren't even allowed to visit their pet.
I just don't understand why. Like, why? He's not even a pit bull.
Can I at least see my dog? Is my dog even here? Can I at least have a picture? They won't even give a picture, anything.
What makes matters worse, says their lawyer Leo Kinahan, is if Tedji has pit bull DNA, VAS will rehome the animal outside of the province.
It's in the eye of the beholder. So if someone says 10% makes you a pit bull, 5%, whatever the case may be, you want to go on that basis, probably every dog has got a bit of another dog in them. Our family Shih Tzu probably could be classified as a pit bull at some point if they wanted to go on that basis.
Chang says he actually asked VAS to charge him with an offense.
So at least we can go to judicial review. They won't do it. We're very upset. We're very disappointed. We're shocked that there's no due process.
Why do they make it so hard? I just want my dog. I just want to be okay.
What adds insult to injury is the fact the Changs are paying boarding fees every day Tedji is in the custody of Vaughan Animal Services. Janice Golding, CTV News.
The Weeknd has canceled his entire world tour. The tour for his After Hours album has already been postponed twice because of the pandemic, but now tickets are being automatically refunded. However, the Toronto superstar says he wants to move the tour to stadiums because of the constraints of arenas. It's being rescheduled for next summer, but no dates have been released. Current ticket holders will be given priority for the new shows when they go on sale.
The Duke and Duchess of Cambridge are committed to making a difference in a number of areas, including mental health and the environment.
Now the Royal Foundation is awarding millions of dollars in prize money to help solve some of the issues affecting our planet. CTV's Andrea Case joins us now to talk about the Earthshot Prize. Andrea.
Michelle and Nathan, good evening. Yes, depending on who you ask, the idea for
Earthshot was inspired by President John F. Kennedy's 1961 moonshot speech. The goal was to put a person on the moon within a decade. Or a baseball home run hitter for the LA Dodgers, Wally Moon. In the 1950s, he would hit the ball up high like a moonshot. That's a whole different ballgame when we talk about this prize, the Earthshot Prize. Powered by 60 cyclists, the music of Coldplay, Shawn Mendes, and Ed Sheeran were brought to life at the inaugural Earthshot Prize awarded in London last night. Other nods to the environment were seen on the green carpet. All attendees were asked to wear something recycled. Emma Watson wore a dress from Oxfam, upcycled from 10 wedding dresses. The Duke and Duchess of Cambridge were no exception. Both his jacket and her dress have been worn before. But the main event was all new. The £1 million each, or $1.7 million Canadian, Earthshot Prize was provided by the Royal Foundation, a charity which supports the work of the Duke and Duchess.
I am delighted to announce that the first ever Earthshot Prize to protect and restore nature is awarded to the Republic of Costa Rica.
The Earthshot Prize will be awarded annually from 2021 to 2030 to five winners in the fields of nature conservation, waste management, ocean revival, air quality, and climate change. The hope is their solutions to environmental problems will come through new policies or technologies. One criticism of climate research has been that it's limited to the developed world, while its effects are most felt by those in underdeveloped countries. Here, the prizes were given to groups around the world.
And I hope that our Earthshot winners have shown you that there is no place for despair. You should feel inspired to act and to demand that the solutions you've seen tonight get all the support they need.
Solutions which could affect not just those in the winning countries, but eventually the entire planet. Okay, so at £1 million each, the Earthshot Prize is the most prestigious global environment prize in history. Now, next year, the Cambridges are taking the show on the road. The ceremony will be held in the United States. Reporting live, I'm Andrea Case.
Stars Tonight is brought to you by Lastman's Bad Boy. Who's better? Nobody.
We know that Ford didn't want to do this. We know that he got dragged to a certificate program kicking and screaming. As a result, it was late, and it's inadequate.
Updating our top stories, high volume leads to long wait times today as the province rolls out its vaccine QR code. There have been 2.5 million receipts downloaded since Friday.
The lead times on products are so long now, in many cases exceeding a year, that when we run out of something, odds are we're not going to get it back in stock.
And supply chain issues continue to cause major delays for the delivery of goods in Canada and around the world. It may mean higher prices and a shortage of goods. Customers are being advised to start their holiday shopping early.
On the markets, the Canadian dollar was down 5 basis points to 80.76 U.S. American benchmark oil gained 16 cents a barrel to close at 82.44. And the TSX Composite Index gained 57 points to close at a new high of 20,985.
Ottawa is being urged to crack down on Facebook and other social media giants.
The corporate heads at both Facebook and YouTube have realized that there's way more money to be made by driving viewers to extremist content than providing a wide array of choice.
The New Democrats are demanding the Trudeau government establish an independent regulator. The watchdog would address disinformation, hateful posts, and algorithm transparency. The call for action follows recent testimony from a Facebook whistleblower who said the company's platform harms children and fosters political division.
The Winter Olympics are less than 4 months away, and today the torch relay for the Beijing Games got underway. It began after the lighting of the flame during a ceremony at ancient Olympia. An actor playing the part of a pagan priestess used a mirror to focus the sun's rays on a fuel-filled torch. Security was tight at the location where the ancient games were held for more than 1,000 years, but still three demonstrators briefly got into the site protesting human rights abuses in China.
We're getting a new picture of how parents are feeling about vaccinating their younger children.
And that's the focus of a discussion on CP24 tonight. We're joined by Reshmi Nair and Colin DeMello. Colin, you'll be in the chair from 7 to 9 all this week.
Yeah, hi, friends, and we're going to be talking about the Pfizer vaccine, which is one step closer to being approved for children between the ages of 5 and 11. But a new study says 18% of Ontario parents don't want to vaccinate their children. So we're going to talk to pediatricians today about the risks and the rewards.
And Reshmi, you'll also be looking at Justin Trudeau's visit to Kamloops today.
Yes, we have Indigenous leaders joining us live on CP24 tonight, Michelle, as they watched him in BC and the message that he delivered apologizing to everyone for not attending on September 30th, the first Truth and Reconciliation Day that he declared. So we'll get reaction from Indigenous leaders coming up on CP24 tonight.
Thank you both. And CP24 tonight airs immediately following this newscast on CP24 from 7 to 9. A sword dating back 900 years has been recovered from the bottom of the Mediterranean Sea.
And it might have never been seen if not for an amateur diver. It's believed the sword belonged to a knight who sailed to the Holy Land almost 1,000 years ago. The meter-long weapon was spotted after an undercurrent apparently shifted sands that had concealed it for so long. Israel's Antiquities Authority thinks the sword is well-preserved under all the seashells and marine organisms. It will be put on display after it's cleaned and restored. The sword was discovered by a man diving off the coast near his home in the northern part of the country. Cool.
Well, if you're heading out tonight, grab a coat, but then tomorrow, Michelle, just throw it back in the closet.
Well, certainly you'll need it for tonight and early in the morning, Michelle. We're going to have clear skies overnight and a low of 6 degrees. Winds will not be too gusty, and they're shifting to the west and then out of the southwest. And then eventually, here's when you ditch the coat, tomorrow afternoon at 20 degrees as our high with lots of sunshine. Warm overnight tomorrow with 13 degrees as our low, 17. So again, warm for Wednesday with a mix of sun and cloud. And then showers move in on Thursday, a bit of a pattern. Pattern shift, we get cooler temperatures for the rest of the week, and note those very low single-digit overnight lows. Back to you, Michelle.
I see them. Thank you, Michelle, and be sure to join Zoraida Allman later tonight for CTV News at 11:30.
You can also stay up to date by going to our website. And a reminder, CP24 tonight begins momentarily on CP24.
For Michelle Jobin and all of us here at CTV News, have a great night.